Good morning, everybody. It's my first time in the US and first time speaking, and I've just about lost my voice at my moment of glory, supposedly. So, very frustrating. So I'll try and speak slowly and speak clearly. What I'm hoping to talk about this morning is just an approach that I've used over the last 7 years, looking at a whole suite of models and analysing them every month. And it's obviously particular to the area that I work in. I'm a cropping extension officer for the Victorian State Government. So I'm looking for a simple way of explaining to farmers of what's going on with the climate models. But I think it's an approach that probably could fit anywhere in the world. If there's models available that are predicting for that area, and they all are, potentially a way of looking at it for your area. So I was going to show where Australia was. I think we've already done that. So State of Victoria, we were talking about Perth and Western Australia here with Peter. He was talking about Birchip. And so the State of Victoria is here, and I'm based in Bendigo, which is basically in the middle of the state. But this project that I've been doing for the last sort of 7 years is basically just summarising the climate forecast for both temperature and rainfall in that state. So it comes down to the resolution of the models as to sort of how small an area you can actually drill into and to make it useful. I mean, many of these models, the State of Victoria is possibly only sort of 4 to 6 pixels in terms of actual data. So the phenomena that Peter was speaking about earlier, El Nino and La Nina, are very important to our area of the world. And more recently, the advent of our knowledge of the Indian Ocean Dipole. So here's a La Nina here happening in 2010, and an Indian Ocean Dipole negative event happening with warmth off Sumatra and coolness off Kenya. And that phenomena is important to us as well in Victoria. And the opposite of that is the El Nino we'd be all familiar with, but also the Indian Ocean Dipole positive, which obviously doesn't affect the US, but does affect Victoria. And so this is the drying pattern for Victoria, and the previous one is the wetting pattern. Often they happen together, but not always. Often we get these phenomena in separate times. So what I started off doing many moons ago was just going to as many coupled circulation model outputs as I could find on the web that were written in English. That was a pretty important thing for me. And it didn't need a password for me to get in. So a lot of these are sort of kept sort of in-house, and I wasn't available, I wasn't lucky enough to get access to them. Analysing just the Pacific and Indian Ocean sea surface temperature outputs from those models, and the precipitation and temperature predictions as well for the 1 to 3 month period, and then the crystal ball gazing out to 4 to 6 months. So I started off using 5 coupled models, 3 ensembles, or I think there's probably only 2 ensembles truly in that, and some statistical systems that were used in Australia. And I was publishing this monthly as a newsletter, sending it out to farmers and advisors. It goes out to 2,500 people. Our data suggests that 36% of people of any one edition actually read it, which is supposedly pretty good. It seems poor to me. But it's published as a PDF initially, and now it's on a website and goes out then. So it's quite interesting. We take sort of 20 of the world's most powerful supercomputers and you crunch that into one A4 page, which is really dumbing down a lot of computer power to something very small. Importantly for farmers and their advisors, I'm attempting to save time here by cutting 2 to 3 hours of web searching down to a 5-minute read. And you see we even take that drilling down and simplifying even to a closer case. So I apologise for the resolution on this one. This is in 2008, and the goodness of PDF making isn't as good as what it is now. And specifically, I'm just looking at what the predictions were and what the realities turned out to be for the 7 years of this forecast now. And so I do it for every month. But the period in Australia and southeastern Australia where we have the most skill is our prediction in our winter period in June and July leading into our spring period of August, September and October. And wheat is the most common crop grown, and at that time of the year in August, September and October, the crop is at about its Z31, the first node stage leading up until flowering and early grain fill. And so we started off with a whole sequence of different models here. Some of them I'm sure you've remember, we've heard about IRI today and the APCC and a number of other sort of individual models that all get combined into those ensembles. And we've got the predictions there for what the Pacific Ocean was doing, the Indian Ocean, and the rainfall and the temperature. So in this year, there was very strong consensus for an Indian Ocean dipole positive. And so the whole aim of this was, rather than looking at just one model, was to look at a whole spread of them and look at the variation in what they're saying and look, try and see if there was consensus and whether that would help make decisions. So in terms of the Indian Ocean, there was some consensus there, but the rainfall consensus was still pretty much for average, but there was a number of models coming in with a slightly drier or even a drier forecast, and the temperature was for slightly warmer or average temperatures. And then in reality, these are a decile map put out by our Bureau of Meteorology, and this dark red colour is when you're in decile 1, which is the lowest 10% of records, and the pink is decile 2 to 3, white is 4 to 7, the light blue is 8 to 9, and the darker blue is decile 10. And so the prediction was for average or slightly drier, and yet for the spring season it turned out to be much drier. And so there was, from that signal, there was sort of a missed opportunity for lowering farmers' nitrogen rates at that time because, you know, the convincing signal from the models was not strong enough that it was going to be dry, that you might have necessarily changed your management. The temperature predictions, though, so this is this yellow, or the fawn, the pale yellow colour is a 0 to 1 degree anomaly in temperature, and the dark, the yellow, the brighter yellow is a 1 to 2 degree warmer anomaly. And so the model did pretty well for temperature there in terms of getting that. The next year, there was very strong consensus from the models at that time, almost universal, that there was going to be an El Nino event in that year of 2009, in our spring. The Indian Ocean was doing nothing. It was sitting there at neutral. And not surprisingly, there was a number of predictions from the models for slightly drier conditions in our area of the state. And temperatures, not surprising also with El Niños, were predicted to be slightly warmer. So slightly drier, slightly warmer. And in the reality, what happened was we did have an area of the state that was slightly drier for spring. But for quite strange things, that year was an uncoupled El Niño. It wasn't a proper one. It didn't work properly. And so local sea surface temperature arrangements around Australia were more important than the El Niño, and the season was actually reasonable. And so for the opposite reason this time, we had a missed opportunity, perhaps putting on normal rates of nitrogen in that season, because we sort of got a false prediction there. It worked well in some areas, but for the majority of the state, no. And the temperatures were slightly warmer. It certainly was in just the north of the state. In 2010, this is the time where the models, you know, this was their golden year, 2010, the La Niña of 2010. If your model was incapable of predicting a La Niña in that year, you should probably throw it away. It was very early predicted on, even as early as March, that something was possible, and it turned out to be a very strong event. So all the models are sitting on La Niña at that time. There was a slightly warmer Indian Ocean possible, and there was very strong consensus from the models that things were either slightly wetter and or wetter, and Australia had gone through a 10-year period of at least below average or very dry drought conditions at that time, and it was very hard to believe that it was going to start raining when it hadn't for 10 years, and some of these models were saying it was actually going to be much wetter than normal, and that was very hard to believe as well. There was very strong consensus for slightly warmer temperatures, which is interesting in a La Niña, and as the maps show, they got that temperature thing very wrong. It was not surprising. It was a very wet year for spring. Most areas in decile 10, so the highest 10% of record. Some of these dark blues are highest on record for temperature for that for rainfall for that spring. So excellent. The model fantastically well. Many farmers took advantage of that and were putting on extra nitrogen as the season went along and got really good responses to that, but the rain didn't stop and it kept going to our summer and harvest period, and there was weather damage in the grain, which was no joy. I do not understand why the models got that temperature thing so wrong. It was, you know, it sort of seems intuitive that it was going to be wetter. As the person said before, it was likely to probably be cooler, and yet it was cooler, but the models didn't predict it. In 2011, once again, it was a backup of a double La Nina year with a La Nina developing later in 2011. So there were slightly cool signatures in the Pacific Ocean. There were some slight Indian Ocean dipole positive predictions in the Indian. But the rainfall predictions there pretty much sitting on the fence at average, and some average to slightly warmer temperature predictions. And then what actually happened was that much of the state was normal, but some of our key areas were very much below average for rainfall. And so once again, there was this missed opportunity to decrease their nitrogen rates because of the poorness of that spring. Interestingly enough, the agronomic outcome from that year was quite good because of the stored soil moisture from the La Nina of the summer period over December, January, where we got good profiles of moisture. And even though the spring was dry, the agronomic outcome from that year was quite good. The prediction of slightly average to slightly warmer will actually turn out to be totally slightly warmer. In 2012, once again, the El Nino started to poke its head up again as a possibility. The Indian Ocean not doing much. Pretty very strong consensus for average with a few slightly drier predictions and pretty much average predictions for temperature with a few slightly warmer. And it turned out to be a very ordinary season. It was quite dry and our western part of the state really suffered. Our eastern part of the state had some residual moisture left over from the summer, our December, January, February 2011-12 La Nina, and so it had a reasonable season because of that. But pretty poor outcome there from the model, and a good outcome in terms of its temperature prediction. 2013, not much happening in the Pacific Ocean. A very strong consensus from all the models for an Indian Ocean dipole negative, which would normally be a rain-bearing system for us. Most of the models sitting on average and only sort of slightly wetter with a couple there, and most of them sitting on average for temperature as well. So average and average was the outcome possibly. The actual outcome was pretty good. Most of the state was in fact average for spring, a little bit drier in some parts of the north, and very wet in some parts of the south, and perhaps even wettest on record in some of those areas. And of course, when something turns out to be wetter than predicted, that's nowhere near as bad as when it turns out to be drier. Because as it keeps raining every week, you can see that, you go, well, I'll put fertiliser out, because fair chance this is not going to change. A pattern has set in. And so the temperatures there were not too bad either. So our most recent one, 2014, predictions for this spring, average is slightly drier and slightly warmer, and the reality has been we've had a terrible spring this year in southeastern Australia, not good at all, and very much warmer temperatures, up to 2 to 3 degrees warmer there for the whole of our spring in most of our wheat belt. So an excellent prediction from the model, but not a good outcome, but farmers certainly held back their inputs. So we recently did a survey in September of this year and asked our readership what they were using this information actually for. And this was quite illuminating. This is a newsletter that goes out to cropping farmers, we think. And it turns out that 26% of them are using it to change their stocking rates. So there's people using this for a purpose that we never even thought was going to be happening. Many grain farmers in Australia are also mixed farmers as well. They have crops and stocks, so that's not totally surprising. But people are changing crops based on this information, which is, I think, scary, because to change your crop in Australia, you have to be making a decision at a time where the models have the lowest skill in the predictability barrier of our autumn and your spring. So interesting stuff. People certainly 15% changing their fertiliser decisions. Nearly finished here. They were farmers, we're asking there. These are advisors, and a quarter of them were using this information to educate their themselves and to make better decisions for their clients based on potential climate conditions in the future. more advisors just not knowing what was useful for it at all, and there's a small percentage there who think it's just not even reliable and I won't even listen to it. My final comment here is from Peter Heyman in South Australia. I think it's a fabulous quote in this area. This information from the climate models is just too good to ignore, because when they get it right, there's real benefits to be made, and if you just ignore that, you'll lose. But still, the information is not good enough to completely rely on. And so we're in this terrible situation where it's, you know, we're sort of in no man's land, where we want it to be better than what it currently is, and hopefully in the future it will be. So I'll finish off my talk there. Thanks, Samson.
Thanks, Alan.
Exactly, yes. And when, I think I was looking at your talk this morning, Peter, where I think when you're making these assessments of how the model goes, it comes down to how harsh do you want to be on the model, and if I was just only leaning, was it above or below median, some of these models would probably be doing a little bit better than if you're sort of trying to nail them on their actual prediction. But I think from my... farmers ask me all the time, if you've looked at 11 models for 12 months for 7 years, which one's the best one? And the reality is there just isn't one. Every model has its day over time, which is why it's important to, you know, look at them over balance. Sorry? Which models?
Yeah.
Oh, there's a whole suite of them there. Yeah, I might talk to you afterwards about that. Yeah. There's many models. Yeah. There's 11 of them that are in that system. Yeah. Oh, there's lots of separate forecasts there. Yes, as well as some ensemble ones. Yeah.
I just want to make a special thanks to the DDEs in the group. When we contacted one person I know that directly working with the farmers, somebody asked the question to you, Jerry, who is using this kind of information. So I think so far, when you selected the number of speakers in this group, I contacted him. And that's not the youngest of the group. I think yes, it's some of the questions to you, yes, that's the first member of the group. Thank you very much for helping to do that.